When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside. Just outside of New York City and from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Happy Easter to all who celebrate. And important weekend in Irish history, Andrew. It was the Easter Rising. Where we rose up in 1916 against the British and our first strike for freedom. The proclamation of independence was read, and that's why I feel it's fitting that we will now begin into a podcast that will be at least over an hour about English football. It's correct, and it's,
yes,
right.
You've really come full circle.
Well, I think the English, colonialism was bad. We can accept that colonialism in all its forms remains bad. But the English did give us the greatest thing in the world, which is organized football.
Yeah. And I would also say a happy April Fool's Day to all who celebrate.
Have you done anything? Are you
It's an abomination of a holiday. People who do stuff today to try and trick people are the worst. No, it's terrible. It's a dumb, dumb holiday.
You know, Shoot magazine in, I think it was 87, put out a front cover. I don't know how they put it out. Did they seriously mock up an April Fool's edition of Shoot magazine? But the mock-up that they made, I guess they did, was Ian Rush in an Everton jersey. Rush joins Everton. And apparently Rush was in on it. He put on an Everton jersey. They took a picture. And because then there was no internet, the Merseyside went into meltdown over it.
Well, this was a big thing too with Sports Illustrated years ago. I think they did a fake piece on a pitcher called Sid Finch, who he could throw like 105 miles an hour or more than that. No, I'm looking it up now because I couldn't remember the details. He could throw like 170 miles an hour.
They did a piece in
actual Sports Illustrated about this guy, Sid Finch, that I think they said the Mets had discovered this guy or something. And he throws
he throws
170. And like, but the whole thing was building up to like, April Fool's, like they just created a fake guy.
Right.
But they, you know, the gravity of Sports Illustrated is you trust them as you're reading this thing. And it's a terrible, terrible holiday. And I don't like its intentions. It's not fun.
It's not fun. And you know, like usually, I know there's always someone who gets it wrong. You know, there'll be someone who will make an awful joke. They'll tell something that's false, but it will be a cruel thing. Like something awful, like a terminal disease or someone's pregnant. You know there's that person who has no sense of what real humor is or real comedy is, and they'll go for that, and they'll just ruin people's days.
Yeah.
It will happen. And it's dumb. It's dreadful. The best one I saw, just quickly, Grandstand was a sports show on the BBC. And in the 90s, they would have Des Lynam, the anchor, front and center, and behind him would be the newsroom with people working and walking around, you know. So it was kind of give the sense of an active, busy newsroom. And so they pretended that two people would have a fight. So Lynam is giving the sports. He's going, you know, at 1 o'clock, we'll go to Goodison Park for the preview of the Merseyside Derby, blah, 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 horse racing at 3. And in the background, these guys are knocking the, just rolling around, and people are trying to separate them. There's a full-blown fight in the background. That was their April Fool's.
All right. That's kind of fun. That's all right. Maybe we should take a page out of that book. Somebody behind us to just start brawling. This is not an April Fool's joke. I think this podcast is going to be a lot of fun today. The Premier League returned. I'm excited to talk about it. And that somewhere in there, and also when we get to the Xabi Alonso conversation, not that, I don't know. Sometimes, JJ, you ever go into a show where you're like, I think some of my opinions may be unpopular today.
Yeah, definitely.
I kind of, I don't think I'm going to say anything crazy, but I sort of had that feeling as I was walking downstairs to record this morning, where I was like, could be a couple things I say here that I don't know. I'm not sure how they'll be received. I guess we'll find out as we go through here.
I'm excited.
I don't want to oversell it. Far be it from me to oversell. But yeah, we'll see as we go along here. Big Premier League weekend. The Xabi Alonso news was hugely significant, of course, for the managerial futures of a couple different prominent clubs around Europe.
Yeah.
So we'll do all those things. And it's a huge midweek as well in the Premier League. So we'll look ahead to
it's
some of the biggest
time
games.
Of year. It's just that time of year. I'm transported back to my youth where this was like in your teenage years, it was preparing for state examinations. If you were of a certain age and you're like, I got to use the Easter holidays to study, but there's so much happening in the football. How can I balance these things in my life?
Sure.
Oh, God. I've taken back to that kind of thing. Also, I think this podcast is like it's like when you go to a restaurant and you have a starter that you're not that into, but there's an amazing entree like that you cannot wait to get to. And so, I feel like Manchester City versus Arsenal is like a big old salad that you're like, oh, well, we have to eat it because it's polite, but I'm really looking forward to whatever's coming after.
Here's where I'll disagree with you, and we'll use this as a jumping off point into what was definitively the marquee match of this weekend in Arsenal and Manchester City at the Etihad. I'll disagree with you for this reason. You're not wrong. The game itself was a total dud. But
nothing happened.
But we're not here. We're not calling the game. We're here to analyze our thoughts on what happened. And I actually do think that there are some interesting conversations that come out of a game like that. Ian Dark, JJ, of broadcaster fame, he posted this on Twitter afterwards. He said, anyone who believes Arsenal should have put on an all-singing, all-dancing display away to Manchester City has never managed a football team. Arteta's job was to get something from the game, and he did. Mm. At this stage, only results matter. So here now we enter into opinion one from me that I'm not sure how it will be received. I don't know that I fully agree with what Ian Dark says there. And I understand that when I say that, I'm flying in the face a little bit of some of the opinions I've had in the past, namely Portugal and France in the European Championship, when I said I had no problem with what Portugal decided to do in that game. And they won. I mean, they were better off for it. Here's what I'll say about Arsenal and their approach to this game against Manchester City. I will not go so far as to say that I'm disappointed that they played the way that they did. And ultimately, Ian Dark is right. They did get a point out of it. They did get a result in some form out of this one. I'm not disappointed that they did it. I am, however, surprised that they did. So you can parse through those two emotions however you want, but I'm surprised that Arsenal went out and played that way. Let's go. I want to get a little deeper into it. This is from The Guardian. Mikel Arteta's side defended in a low block with aggression and asked if he felt they had done so illegally. Manuel Akanji said, definitely. When we got through, sometimes they stopped us with the fouls. If there's no action to it from the referee, it's hard. Akanji then wondered why Taylor did not step in. I don't understand. One in the first half from Kai Havertz was a very late tackle on Stefan Ortega. For me, it's clearly a yellow card. I don't want to say just against us. There were also some decisions against them that I didn't understand why he gave a foul. There are some rules that I think that are clear yellow cards where it should be. I remember with Jorginho when he had already done a tackle in which it was a foul and did the second one. He didn't even get a yellow card for the foul. Akanji goes on and he's upset. But I remember, JJ, there was a sequence in the second half where Arsenal committed three fouls in the span of 4 seconds. City made three quick one-touch passes, and each one, the player who released the ball was fouled on them, but advantage kept getting played until there was no more advantage. They called three fouls in 4 seconds. This was Arsenal in this game, and I suppose that, you know, they fouled a ton in buildup. They played with a low block in defense. It was not a normal Arsenal performance. And I say I'm surprised for a few reasons. One, something we've talked about, they're the most informed side in the Premier League right now. They've been on fire as of late. Mm. Playing the way that they've played this season has gotten them 70 goals and has had them give up only 24. It's not like they leak goals playing the way that they play. Also, surprised, Manchester City missing some key players. No mm-hmm. Ederson, no Walker, no John Stones, Nathan Ake forced to leave early with an injury. Like, it felt like there maybe could have been some vulnerability in the back for Manchester City if Arsenal had applied more consistent pressure beyond just throwing a high press at them and trying to rattle guys on the ball. You know, right. I just mean attacking for extended periods of time. You know, also, it doesn't hurt that Arsenal have already beaten Manchester City this season. Granted, it was at home, and Arsenal have struggled at the Etihad historically, but I'm not always a believer that things that have happened in past seasons are indications of what's going to happen in this current season. I think okay. City are a little different, Arsenal a little different. And then finally, I'm a little surprised because a loss for Arsenal, while bad, if it had happened, would not have been the end of anything. Now, if you told me they were 3 points back, something like that, and it's a situation where there's a true desperation to not lose because a loss kind of ends the title race, I would understand it more. But you're leading by a point. So, like, I don't know. I have to look at these things. Look, we only know one reality. What wound up happening is the only thing we know. We can't compare this to any other situation because all we know is what happened. But, like, going into the game, if you told me, like, what is the more likely thing to happen? Arsenal going into a low block and Manchester City never finding a way through it, which I have stats to back up the fact that that hardly ever, that doesn't happen. This is right. This is very rare. Or Arsenal playing the way they play and winning 2-1 or a 2-2 draw, something like that. I would probably say it's more likely that Arsenal and City just play their games and Arsenal gets some kind of result that way than I would have saying Arsenal are not really going to try to attack other than the occasional counter. They're going to try to break City down in a low block or try to prevent City from breaking them down in a low block, and City will never find their way through. Like that never, City always find their way through. The Athletic said this: it was the first time City have failed to score in a home league game since October 2021, ending a run of 47 consecutive games. Arsenal limited City to their joint fewest touches in the opposition penalty area, 4 in a first half at the Etihad since Pep came to the Premier League in the summer of 2016. Manchester City striker Erling Haaland has now faced Arsenal 3 times in the season without scoring. Like, these are things I'll give Arsenal credit for this. I didn't know they could really, like, I knew they had a great defense, but like, they now showed that there's another way that they can play and they can do so somewhat effectively. Right. Defensively, they didn't get a foot wrong all game. I'm just saying, I've seen Arsenal this season. They've been great defensively playing a normal way, and they score a ton of goals playing that way. I guess I'm just a little bit surprised that they were this deferential to Manchester City.
Okay, so there's a couple of things there. I know you've kind of ruled out previous results impacting current games, but let's just say maybe there was some residual energy from last year's title run-in where Arsenal got absolutely pumped 4-1, and they did not want that to happen again at the Etihad. They were like, well, we're not going to be, as Ian Dark said, all singing, all dancing. I also think that football's such an outcomes-based analysis. Like, so we're always going to go, had Leandro Trossard slotted home instead of going high.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's got to make the pass to Martinelli.
Or squared the ball. Then me and you are having a conversation where the term masterclass may have been used a couple of times.
By the same token, if Nathan Ake scores on a header on a corner kick from 2 yards out,
yeah,
we're also saying how are Arsenal choosing to play this way?
Or Doku has a better first touch off a cross from Grealish. Yeah, okay. I hear what you're saying. I think that it was definitely a more pragmatic approach, and it was something that Barney Roney and The Guardian had the same thoughts as you. Is this one that down the line Arsenal will regret not going for because of City's weaknesses in certain areas? And also because in six games against the rest of the current top five, there's no wins for City. You know, Arsenal, maybe there'll be a feeling that Arsenal could have done more and tried to go and win this game, and that this will haunt them down the line. It may very well do. We've seen before in the past, we've seen Liverpool title run-ins where they're like, they look back at games. I remember a draw at Goodison Park in a derby thinking, you know, that's going to come back and hurt us in the end. And it's fine margins. But I wouldn't massively criticise the way that they played. Like, when you've got two centre-backs dealing so well and so physically and making Haaland almost a complete non-event in this game, you've got to give them credit.
Of course. Of course.
And so I don't want to...
But don't they do that anyway? Like, Haaland didn't score against them in either of their other games against them.
I mean, that's the other argument. There's also, like, whether we like it or not, or whether Arsenal fans like it or not, Arteta is kind of coming off the Pep Guardiola coaching tree. So I'm not saying he suffered Pep brain himself, where he completely overthought the game. But he definitely probably you talked about being deferential. He was worried about the things he knows Pep's teams can do. The teams, you know, because he was part of it. He's part of game, you know, making plans and game planning against other teams. And he was probably trying to second guess, well, they'll do this, they'll do that. We need to be robust. We need to be resolute. And when you look at the way Arsenal played against Liverpool, particularly in the first half at the Emirates, you might feel, well, why not just do that? Why not? Like, there was no deference there. Arsenal were aggressive. Mm-hmm. Arsenal won the ball. They got on the front foot. They cut Liverpool open several times. But I think there was a kind of a sense or a feeling from both managers that a draw wouldn't be the worst result in the world. I do think City tried to win it. I thought Arsenal were set up excellently. Look at how many centre-backs or players that can play in the centre-back position started for both teams. Like, that is going to nullify. If you start with that many centre-backs, I mean, City played a team entirely. City had at least six centre-backs in their side. Arsenal could have claimed the same, or maybe not quite, but you know, you could slot Declan Rice in there. No, but I'm just saying that there was this one. If we look at it even from a physical standpoint, was set up for nullification. And if Bernardo Silva doesn't get the breaks, if Doku just didn't have a game that he would, like, there was a couple of moments I think of when De Bruyne finally got free of the shackles of the game and burst down the left. And he plays that pass. Remember that? It's a very perceptive ball where he doesn't pick out the first runner. He picks out Doku. And it falls to Doku's feet. And you're like... And he just shanks it up over the bar. Like, that's part of it too. Players who are just that little bit off their game in terms of the finishing part. And that's what you end up with. This could have ended and easily ended up 1-0 Arsenal or 1-0 City. Very easily. We got a 0-0. And I'm not sure... I'm not sure with the way it ended. I disagree with Barney Roney. I don't think this will be the game that decides things for Arsenal. But there is that feeling when City are vulnerable or perceived to be vulnerable, you have to make it count.
Yeah, and look, I do want to reiterate one thing that I do. It may not have been what I had chosen if I were Mikel Arteta, but like, Arsenal did do a thing that teams don't usually do. Like, they did really, they bottled up Haaland. Manchester City's moments of really applying a lot of pressure were pretty few and far between. So Arsenal did show that, like, they had the discipline defensively to be able to go out and do this. You know, that center back pairing might be the best in the Premier League this season. Obviously, getting Declan Rice was probably for moments like this where he can be a defensive shield, but also, you know, help spring attacks back the other way. Now, I guess the irony, so when I saw the Ian Dark tweet, I clicked on it, and the comments from Arsenal fans, they all fell in line. They all, you know, there was a big sentiment of we'll get criticized for this by people who just don't understand. And like, you know, they were praising
Ian Dark.
It's not
criticism. We're just talking here.
But the thing that's funny about that is I feel like there's an irony to that sentiment from Arsenal fans, because I'm sitting here saying that, like, I believe you're good enough to not have needed to do that. Like, I'm kind of going above and beyond to praise them here and say, like, I don't think you had to play that way without getting, you know, and still been able to get a result at that place.
Yeah.
I think there was a little bit of a sentiment. Maybe Arsenal fans are scarred a little bit from recent meetings at the Etihad. It just felt to me that there was a sentiment coming from them of, this is what you have to do to either win or get a result there. And I'm saying, I don't know, you know, Liverpool don't do that.
I know, but
hell, Tottenham don't usually do that. They, what was it, 3-3 earlier this year?
Yeah,
like,
but I know
Arsenal
that, but
I don't think Arsenal have to do that.
I hear what you're saying, but let's look at the protagonists involved. Like, we've got, on one hand, we've got Jurgen Klopp and we've got Ange Postecoglou. They don't play any other way.
But Tottenham are doing that pre-Ange. They've gone to the Etihad. We don't need to make this a Tottenham thing. That will only bury me further in the eyes of Arsenal
fans.
That's not what I'm trying to do. But
I would never... I'm not suggesting that... I wouldn't say that Arteta is more cerebral than those two coaches. And that's not what I'm saying. But Arteta is more kind of nuanced. He's less of a we play the way we play. He is more of a guy who will really, really think it. It's the coaching tree he comes from, the thought tree. And I think they both thought themselves to death yesterday. The amount of people getting upset as well at people like me on X and different platforms saying this was just a crap game. It's just a terrible game of football. There's nothing wrong with saying that. There's nothing wrong with saying that, you know. I love the way Barney Roney wrote about it. He asked the question, would Arsenal look at the vulnerabilities and then go for City? That would be a no. City lined up with a muscular blue wall of six primarily defensive players. From the early moments, they pinned Arsenal in, killed the centre of the pitch, taking all the air out of that spaces. There were collisions and stretched sinews, ruminative 27 pass moves. It was a total suffocation, pillow over the face football. City had control, but not a great deal more. This wasn't end-to-end stuff. It was end stuff. Like, it was particularly bad. We did have a collision of a team that didn't want to get hammered with a team that kills you slowly but surely with a suffocating landslide of passes. And this is what we ended up with. There's also the unfortunate thing for people in the Sky Super Sunday lineup, or NBC Super Sunday, whatever you want to call it. It was a pulsating start, or at least a game that had lots of chances followed by that. You know, to set it up, it's like, oh, we've got our main show is setting up movies on a TV channel back in the day, and you're going to have Heat, and then the matinee is going to be Failure to Launch. What are you doing? Yeah. You can't follow that film with that. So, like, there was definitely a bit of, all right, we've just had the warm-up game. That was amazing. Here's the main... Oh, no. Oh, God. But look, yeah, people were very upset at being told what was... There was a couple of people who were trying
What
to
were
tell...
people trying to say?
Oh, there was a couple of people trying to say, well, it was actually just because... What would you have preferred, someone said to me? What would you have preferred? Mistakes leading to goals... Would you prefer three mistakes and then three goals? Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
that sounds
sure.
A little more fun.
I would have preferred that. You know?
We're not the coaches. We're the consumers here.
Yeah. There was some real absolute dopes who were out yesterday. Here. Palindrome 99 at them half spaces. Ugh, you know he's going to be a tool. Thanks. Both Pep and Arteta said it was a great game of football. Cagey, but a battle. This is replying to me. Everything City tried to do, Arsenal nullified tactically and stopped them from scoring at home. Would you have liked three errors to make it entertaining? There's a reason Pep won 5 and Klopp won. Yeah, there's a reason. There may be 115 of them. But anyways, Jesus, like, bad game's a bad game. It's okay. sometimes nil-nils, all nil-nils are not equal. Sometimes they can be a barnstormer, but we got to get off this. Seriously,
no, just, there just weren't a ton of chances in this game. I mean, you know, and some of that is down to the players too. Like a ball fell to Haaland right in front of goal and it just kind of went through his legs. Like he whiffed on it. And, you know, so it wasn't like, that is also a, like somebody saying, would you have rather seen three mistakes leading to three goals? Well, how about the mistakes that led to goals not happening? Like I don't want to see that.
Led to no goals.
Right. So
can I talk to you about something? It's a regular occurring thing that comes up here. And again, I'm probably going to get, there are a lot of Pep acolytes that follow us and we can't talk about Pep other than in glowing terms and that he's the greatest of all time. But he started with the on pitch instructional again. I just feel like, and it always seemed to be, it was once to Joshua Kimmich at Bayern Munich when he was a teenager. And the other times it's been mostly to Raheem Sterling, and now it's Jack Grealish. You saw after the game where he's one of the tabloid newspapers called it berating. I'm not sure if it's berating. It's just like overly enthusiastic instructionals straight after the game. And Grealish gave that face. You know the meme of the girl in the nightclub that has the guy talking into her ear and she's just staring into the middle distance like, oh, won't this guy shut up? That is what Grealish gave. It's one of those. I don't understand why it happens. Why he has to do it. Why? I'm not sure I fully agree with Richard Keys that it's completely performative.
Is that what he said?
Yeah. I couldn't grab the audio in time. It was taken down, but it was Richard Keys going, I'll do an impression. Oh, look at this. Get down the tunnel. Get down the tunnel. This is so tedious. Completely performative. Shouldn't even be on the pitch.
So we
should move on.
Yeah, there you go. Nil nil. I mean, look, it's unfortunate in that it was one of the most hyped games of the season and it wasn't a great game. It just wasn't. But it does prolong this three-team title race, no question about that, which has now altered a bit as Liverpool. I mean, if you're talking about who is the winner of the nil-nil draw between Manchester City and Arsenal, I suppose it's Liverpool, who earlier in the day came from behind to beat Brighton. They move atop the table now, 2 points ahead of Arsenal and 3 points ahead of Manchester City. A couple things in this one. I suppose this is a big day for Mo Salah. He scored the winner. He's now scored in three straight matches across all competitions for Liverpool. WhoScored.com posted this against Brighton yesterday. Mohamed Salah set records for most shots most shots, 12, and touches in the opposition box, 22 in a Premier League match this season. Here's the question I have about Salah's day. I love that he's this involved. The most dangerous version of Salah is when he is constantly threatening like this, and he was very much that. The only thing I would ask you is 12 shots for one goal. Oh. If Darwin Nunez had this game, would we be mocking him today?
Absolutely. It was one of those where, like, the goal, let's just talk about the good first. The goal that ultimately sealed the game, the Salah goal, is an unbelievable bit of play where Sabis lies on the right and he smashes. Like, you're like, what are you doing? It's almost too hard of a pass to the man of the match, the guy we should be talking about. Alexis McAllister, who controls it perfectly and then slides in Salah, who scores and slots it home. But yeah, it was one of those where you've talked about it before on the podcast, Andrew, with almost incredulity. You've asked me, are there Liverpool fans for whom they just tear their hair out watching this guy? There are Liverpool fans who are like, equally, he's been brilliant. We wouldn't be where we are without him. But also, this guy drives me absolutely mental. Absolutely mental. So a lot of the game was him shanking shots wide, skying him over the bar.
But I don't know if any of his misses were, like, egregious.
No, they weren't. But they were. There was a couple of them just trying to think back. Now, there was a couple of them.
Maybe he should have played a couple passes instead of taking the shots himself. Sort of what you get with these. With these ruthless goal scorers.
That is the main criticism. I've told you about my Liverpool supporting friend from home, Colm, who it's like, I'm like, do you actually like Salah? Because he never seems to have a good, he'll text me in the middle of a game. He's driving me mad. you know, and I know who he's talking about. He didn't need to tell me. Yeah, it's one of those weird little things. And I'm also aware that I am using one of the great footballisms of the modern day, which is, you know, it's one of those. I've got to stop saying that in this podcast.
I realize I haven't noticed this. Is this a bingo
card? I've said it
card?
About five times already because a friend of mine. I'm locked in a text chain with a friend of mine, and we don't talk normally. We talk like either in Roy Keane speak or football speak.
Okay.
And we've been making each other laugh by saying, it's one of those, really, isn't it? Like, I'm just...
Look, you need to be who you are. You're a proper football man. You should use PFM terminology.
I know. It's too much, though. I think I've done it five or six times now in the podcast. So please, somebody keep count. But yeah, that game was a classic game where the people who love, or rather hate to love Salah is better. They had a field day with this one. But Andrew, so I went to watch it at the Monroe, which was empty when I got there. With about 30 minutes to kick off, and I thought, wow, everybody really really into their Easter Sunday plans. People are traveling. They've gone away. By kickoff, the bar was pretty much full, and the air out of the balloon feeling when Danny Welbeck smashed that goal home. I mean, it's Brighton were really, really good, and it took 45 minutes for Connor Bradley to get to grips with Adringa down the left-hand side. Now, I know in our Premier League previews back in August, I had picked him out as someone who could really light up the Premier League and be great for Brighton. I did it based on stuff I'd read. I had no idea he would actually be. Someone's going to pick him up. He's going to be another one that's going to get poached from them. And he is quality. In his, what, maybe 10, 12 games or since he's kind of become the right back for Liverpool in the absence of Trent Alexander-Arnold, I haven't seen him struggle as much with a player and yet still be still put in a really good performance. Bradley was great again. And it's not been spoken about enough. Liverpool are now 2 points top of the table, but, you know, missing, you know, having to figure things out at centre-back, having the left-back out, Joe Gomez having to come in and deputise, you know, the injuries they've had. They're doing this without probably their most creative player in Trent Alexander-Arnold. This is pretty great stuff from Klopp. And I know it's very easy to say now, but you feel like he's leaving this legacy of players behind him. Like, the club is in good order with what's coming through the ranks.
Sure.
If these guys can be involved in a title race as they are right now.
Just to close the book on the Salah discussion, I'm just so curious because whenever you tell me that there are Liverpool fans out there that have this problem with him, it blows my mind. Like, it hurts my head to think that could be. If we conducted a questionnaire of exclusively Liverpool fans, asking them who is Liverpool's best player of this era,
oh,
would Salah win that,
or
would Van Dijk?
I think it'd be close. There's a lot. There's an awful
or
lot.
Someone
of,
else I'm not thinking of.
There's a huge amount of love for Van Dijk. A massive amount of love, and he's seen as that signing that changed everything. But I can't look beyond Salah for his return. Unbelievable.
And I mean, look, you know me. I just inherently my puny football brain. For me, it's just inherently harder to like. If it's close between Salah, a goal scorer, and Van Dijk, a defender, I will always give the benefit of the doubt to the goal scorer because it's the hardest thing to do in this sport. And Salah has done it at this level for this long. I just think that's harder than to be an elite defender for this long. I would vote Salah, and I wouldn't think twice about it.
I think so. And the way Salah kind of made himself, like, he wasn't this... It's not like they bought him from Roma as the complete package, this goal-scoring genius. Like, he finished, I think, his last season in Roma, he had 16 goals, and he had, like, 10 or 12 assists or something. It was very good numbers, don't get me wrong. But he was playing much further wide. Or he wasn't in a central striking position. For me, he's been... I just can't get beyond the volume of goals, Andrew.
I know. And it's every year. He's so consistent. On the Brighton side of this, JJ, So before the game, Roberto De Zerbi gave a press conference. And my takeaway from it was very much, this is a man laying the groundwork for his exit. I'm just going to read a couple quotes here. I saw Ben Jacobs posted these. Roberto De Zerbi, when asked if he could sign a new contract at Brighton, quote, "At the moment, no, we haven't found an agreement. I want to know what the plan, project, and future is, because if I don't feel comfortable and have the right motivation, I can't stay any longer. I want to speak with my club. I have a contract, but the problem is not the contract. The problem is finding the same plan, the same target, the same vision for the future. I have not decided yet what my future is. I want to speak with Tony Bloom and my club to understand their plan, and then we will take the decision together without problems." This is laying the groundwork. This is him preparing fans for a departure while simultaneously setting the table for it to not be seen as your fault.
Oh, yeah. Like,
that's, you know, these are very abstract ideas of, you know, the plan, the project, the future. Like, you know, what are the odds that the board's ambition and his are going to align? You know, like, he didn't, like, the reality of the situation, let's say the board at Brighton tells De Zerbi, "We'll keep everyone. We'll keep everyone. Matoma, Ferguson, Pascal Gross, Estupiñan, Adingra, whoever. We won't sell anybody." De Zerbi, like, that won't be enough for him, because De Zerbi, he wants to win trophies. And, like, okay, keep all your players, but to satisfy De Zerbi, they're going to have to buy top-notch talent.
Yeah.
And top-notch talent aren't going to want to go to Brighton. They're just not. It's a club that's not going to be competing in the Champions League next season. They're not seen as one of the top clubs in England, despite what their performance has been over the past couple seasons. So even if they keep everybody, De Zerbi will always have this out. He'll always be able to say, "Oh, but the board, you know, they couldn't bring in this guy. So what am I supposed to do? I want trophies. The board, they can't bring in these players. So I have to go." And, you know, he's tried to make himself a sympathetic figure, but don't confuse it. He's laying the groundwork to try to leave for the job that he wants, for whatever job he truly wants. And he wants to be seen not as the villain for doing so.
He knows there's potentially two top jobs. The two top jobs in English football are up for grabs: Liverpool and Manchester United. He knows this. And he knows his name is being talked in those circles. And that's just, this is what it is. Folks, this is the Italian version of Brendan Rodgers. Remember the time he was at Leicester? Leicester are flying and Arsenal are looking to replace. It was when it was between Arteta, just before, it was when they appointed Arteta, but Rodgers thought he was in the running and he'd be interviewed. "Well, I'm just focused on, you know, what's in front of me in the next game," and, you know, all these kind of euphemisms. And, "Well, you know, I have a contract." Okay, fine. Yeah. Why don't you just say, "No, I'm not going there and I'm committed"? You know, it's the same with Ange Postecoglou at Celtic. This is the game. This is how it works. And De Zerbi is, you're right, he's setting the table 100%.
He's not going to be managing that team next season. That's my prediction.
Yeah, unlikely. But he's gonna come into conversation a little bit later, I think.
Oh, interesting. So moving off the title race now, I would ask you, with Liverpool atop, does that now automatically mean that they are favorites?
I don't know if I can say fair. I still feel like it's a three-horse race. Do you not feel that?
Well, of course it is.
Coming out of the weekend.
Absolutely it is. But, like, somebody has to be the favorite, right?
I still feel Manchester City are favorites. It's right there for me. I can't look beyond Arsenal and Liverpool as the two contending with them. I just see City as favorites.
I think it's Liverpool.
You think it's Liverpool now?
I do.
Okay.
I do. We'll see, but it is absolutely, this is
me talking as
this
supporter.
Is as tight as it can be between three teams, though. Like,
yeah, and I'm not sure I'm the best person to be asking this question right now. Because
you put up walls to protect yourself.
Absolutely. In football, in relationships, yeah. In everything in my life. I surround myself with very elaborate walls so I can't be hurt.
Yeah.
That's 100% true, Andrew. That's modern living, though, isn't it? I think that's modern living.
I don't know. That's probably always existed in some form. I'm sure there was a caveman who said, "That saber-toothed tiger, I can't get that. That's too much for me." Because he doesn't want to disappoint himself if he gets killed.
I guess in the medieval times, they actually put up walls to protect themselves. Like physical, real walls, as well as emotional ones.
I think they do that in modern times, too.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah. Continuing, JJ, a couple other Premier League things that we want to mention. Race for the top four. Aston Villa, They began the month with a win and then didn't get any in the Premier League in the middle, but they end the month with a win as well. This one over Wolves. Not an amazing performance from Villa. Emi Martinez with an incredible save on Aitonori early on. I mean, from like inside the 6-yard box.
A great goal by Moussa Diaby.
Oh boy, did he smash that one home. I didn't realize how centrally he hit it until I saw the angle from behind Diaby, and you can see he hit it. I mean, he hits it to Jose Sa essentially, but it's hit so hard that Sa can't react in time. Yeah, he smashed the hell out of that one. And then I wanted to ask you about the second goal for Villa, Ezri Konsa, his chip. He didn't mean that, did he?
No.
Okay.
No, he did not mean that.
I don't think so. From that angle, you're not trying to do that, unless you're like a real goal scorer, which he's also not.
Yeah, also from the angle of being as Konsa. No.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was
unless
a really
he's got some. Remember that? Remember John O'Shea scored this little chip at Highbury? And everyone's like, what? You've got that in your locker? Unless it's that, and I don't feel it is.
It was a really cool goal, but I don't know if he meant it. So Villa, they keep their place above Spurs. Do they have enough in the tank to see this out? Like I said, Mark, you know, they have Lille coming up in the Conference League, so they're still playing in Europe. Ollie Watkins, who looked a little bit off in the first half, and then sure enough, he didn't come out. In the second half, he complained of a little bit of hamstring discomfort. He wanted to go back in. The doctor said, that's not wise. Let's rest you. Wound up being a smart decision as they were still able to win. It should be noted that Villa still have City, Arsenal, Chelsea, and Liverpool.
The short answer is I don't know. They had that that wobble last month, so... Was the 2 weeks off or however long they've had off for the international break? Like, was that a chance for them to recharge, get things right, get people rested? You would say in a tricky game against Wolves, who have been very good, that they have, but we don't know yet. Like you said, it wasn't a superb performance, so
no.
But it's kind of a derby game. It is a derby game, really. So, I don't know is the short answer, Andrew. They're in the driving seat.
Yeah, they are. And, we'll see what Ollie Watkins' injury situation is, but they're much more than just him. I mean, he is, I think the world of that guy.
No, but they can't do it. They can't really afford too many injuries. So,
no. But, Douglas Luiz, Pau Torres, there's still a lot of quality on that team. But we'll see. The team that they're battling top four against is Tottenham, who battled back to take down Luton Town, a pesky Luton Town. Once again, Luton scoring early. In this one, again, the start of this game, the same thing that we talked about with Tottenham a couple weeks ago against Fulham, just sloppy. Like, you look at that first goal for Luton.
Nice goal, though.
Sure, but how it began, Tottenham are threatening. Like, it looks like this is a legitimate attack for Tottenham. And then Kulusevski, who is a player I think pretty highly of, and certainly as a passer, I don't know what he's doing. His pass is so wayward, I don't even really know what the idea was. And then... Luton come back the other way, and you think, okay, Yves Bissouma, I think he has Andros Townsend contained here, but no, Townsend with one step over, and he's just past Bissouma.
That was bad, because when you watch it back in real time, it didn't look as if Townsend, he was carrying the ball purposefully, but it didn't look like he was blazing. And then, like you said, it was one step over.
Yeah.
A very rudimentary, basic B step over, and he's gone.
Yeah. And... Townsend hits Barkley, who does the right thing and passes off to Tahith Chong, who's by himself on the other side, who has time to settle and smash it low into the far corner. With regards to this Luton team, I don't know what's going to happen to them. I do know this. If they get relegated, even if they don't, but especially if they get relegated, there's going to be a fire sale, and a lot of teams are going to have a lot of interest in some guys on this team.
Yeah.
Whether it's, Barkley's resurgence or Chong, who I think has really emerged. I know he's hurt right now, but Elijah Adebayo has had a good season.
Yeah.
There's some guys on that team that I think could really that regardless of what Luton do, you'll see these guys in the Premier League in the future with somebody.
Yeah, and that's the challenge for Luton if they do go down to kind of, I'm sure the clauses will have, that wages are slashed if you go back to the Championship, but to use the parachute payments wisely to kind of do what other teams are doing right now and try and get back in. So it's. Yeah, it's a real challenge, and it's still so up in the air. kind of consensus is that it will be Luton that do go down and not Everton and not Forest, but the weekend doesn't make you very confident of that.
No, we'll get to that in a sec. Just on the Tottenham side of this, in the first half, look, they wind up coming back to win, but JJ Tottenham, I wonder if Darcy was watching this game. It's one of the all-time how did they not score moments that I think I've ever seen.
Yes.
Son rounds the keeper, so it's just the goal. Oh. He hits the inside of both posts. The rebound comes out to Timo Werner, who smashes one. Was it off Chong's face?
Hit Chong in the face.
In the face. And then the ball deflects directly to Sarr, who seemingly has the whole goal, and he smashes it, and it's cleared off the line. They had three absolute stonewall goals in front of them that all three were kept out. I couldn't believe
a bizarre passage of play. And yes, no, Darcy was watching it, and look, there was cursing, I'll put it that way.
yeah, I'm
followed
sure.
Followed by an exasperated, oh, come on.
It was pretty shocking. But they do bounce back. Brendan Johnson emerging is just a really important signing for Tottenham, which through the first half of the season, you weren't sure that was going to be the case. He came on at the half, forced the own goal into happening, then set up Son for the winner as well. And I want to mention on Heung-min Son, here he is to the rescue again for Tottenham. This guy, he's now scored 160 goals for the club. He moves past Cliff Jones, who's a club legend, into sole possession of fifth most in Tottenham history. He has scored so many big goals for them. He's got a golden boot with Tottenham. He has a Puskas with Tottenham. He scored twice in the second leg versus Man City in the Champions League. He took the reins as the captain for Kane during a really kind of tenuous time for the club, transitioning from managers and players. And he's done all of it without really ever getting anything wrong. He's had a couple stretches maybe where, you know, his form dipped. And I remember Tottenham fans saying, you know, where's Son been? But for the most part, this signing has turned out to be, it has to go down as one of the greatest signings in club history, 160 goals. And if you look at it, he'll, you know, I assume he'll be with Tottenham for another few years. He'll get into sole possession of fourth. That's he'll pass Martin Chivers, no question about it. Mm. I don't know if he'll be able to crack the top three, but just the fact that this guy is going to end his career at Tottenham as with the fourth most goals in club history, most likely, he's a legend. He is an absolute legend for this team. And it's you wonder sometimes what would this era have looked like without him? He's just been that great of a player,
and he's so beloved as well.
He is.
No, not by opposition fans, but certainly by his own. Absolutely,
yeah.
Beloved.
Always, you know, yeah. I'll ask the same question of Tottenham that I did about Villa. Do they have enough left in the tank for top four? They also still play City, Arsenal, and Liverpool.
They definitely do, but they, you know,
they're a little more erratic. It seems
they are. The only thing is, can you be guaranteed if Villa have a little slip up that Tottenham are definitely going to take advantage of it? You can't. So that's
no. Neither of these teams, I think, are set out to just win from here on out.
No,
like,
there's going to be some impossible weird.
They're going to beat a team they shouldn't beat. They're going to lose to a team they shouldn't lose to. Like there are twists still to come here, which makes this interesting.
I worry about you developing bald patches where you scratch your head in exasperation.
If I haven't gone bald yet, it ain't happening.
Okay, all right.
With the way that I mean, I don't do well with stress.
No, you're terrible.
All the teams I root for are stress-inducing teams. Like, yeah. If I still have a full head of hair, I'm good.
All right. Not hair, then. There's going to be some physical... Maybe that, you know, your weird body syndrome will just, like, it'll swell. It'll get so bad.
Well, that could happen. I have no control over that. Let's see. Let's continue, JJ. You mentioned the relegation race, and you mentioned Everton.
Can we not do that? I can't.
They lose again. They do so in outrageous fashion.
Oh, my God.
A horrifying stoppage time own goal from Ireland's own Seamus Coleman in the 91st
minute.
Oh,
stop it. It's like a Rovers own. Oh.
It was so bad. It's
just horrifying. It was one of those when I saw, I didn't see the game live, and so I'm going to Goal Zone, and I wanted to pick up a pillow and scream into it. It's a cross coming in. It's into that channel. Is it a dangerous cross?
Sure.
But it's not that dangerous. There's actually nobody there. He could let it run across his body, couldn't he?
Well, he might not know what's behind him.
But don't do that. He chests it into the net. Comes off a peck straight into the net, and he it's one of those where I did it again. It's an incident where he's as absolutely confused by what he's done as everybody else is. And Pickford, and like he looks behind at Pickford as if I think what he was trying to do was do that thing which only the coolest defenders like Virgil van Dijk seem to pull off with real comfortability, whereas you just pop it back with your chest to the goalie.
Sure.
He
didn't come off that way.
Horrifying. Horrifying.
Just of all the ways they continue to invent ways to lose. And I will say this on Everton's behalf. If you told me before the season that this Everton team that we did not think very much of, they're going to have a stretch where they go 3.5 months without winning a game and they will be dealt a 6-point deduction, my response to that would have been, not only are they getting relegated, they're finishing bottom. I mean, how are they not? How are they, like, we still sit here right now and we're like, no, I think they're going to be okay. Like, I don't know how they have managed this.
It's insane. It's truly insane, but there feels like there's much worse news coming for them.
Well,
much worse.
Yeah, and before we get to that, Everton, so I was looking at Football 365. They have an XG table, which basically they tell you what the table would be if things held up to like what the XG was of games in this
right.
season. Everton are sixth in the XG table. Their expected points are 22 higher than their actual points, not including the deduction. Everton have had the higher XG 17 times this season. And just a reminder, they've won 8 games. Like, I mean, right. That's what's made this season so weird, and it's why you can't. It's why at no point have we sat here and said Sean Dyche is on the hot seat, because like he has set them up to like I've always said, a manager can only do so much. All he can do is set his team up to get them into positions to score goals. And then it's up to the player to have the quality to be able to do it. Dyche right. can't score for them. And Everton have done that. Sixth in the XG table, like expected points, 22 more than what they actually have. Like,
yeah.
It's hard to blame the manager.
It is hard to blame the manager, and yet the same website blames the manager. So this is from Winners and Losers, which I was reading this morning. Just as you said that about XG, mm-hmm. Everton's consistent reliance on creating a high volume of low percentage chances was never sustainable. They do not have forwards capable of converting these opportunities. But shifting towards generating an obviously lower volume of high percentage chances would necessitate a change in approach Dyche is either not willing or not able to make. And while they might get away with it this season, his and their stated aim being to move away from this sort of relegation battle marks it out as another wasted failed campaign under another ill-fitting manager.
Not all of their chances are low percentage.
Listen. Matt Stead, who is absolute trooper at Football 365, I know he's got the stats. That is what's screaming for him. And I'm not saying Dyche is doing a bad job. I'm just like, I don't know. What's happening off the field is far more concerning.
So the bad news with Everton didn't stop with the result. No, because this is Everton, and there's no ceiling to the bad news that this club seems like they can be.
Well, there's no floor.
Yeah, depending on how you want to look at it. I'm reading here from ESPN FC, a story that came out this morning. Premier League club Everton reported losses of £89.1 million for the 2022-2023 season in their latest accounts report on Sunday, up from £44.7 million in the previous campaign. Oh boy, JJ, that's more than double. In a statement, Everton pointed to the, quote, indefinite suspension of key commercial partnerships as a factor in the accounts. In 2022, Everton halted their major sponsorship with companies belonging to Alisher Usmanov, the Russian metals tycoon, who's been sanctioned by the European Union. The move came in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. There's a lot more facts and figures here, but all they do is kind of further hammer home the state of Everton's negative finance situation. I don't know what Everton's defense is for this. Like they're awaiting what the penalty will be, if there will be one, for their PSR breach. Like, if you're leaning on the suspended sponsorships with Usmanov's companies as your defense, like, I don't know is anyone hearing that as a defense? Like, it's sort of the risk you inherit when you decide to get in bed with a Russian oligarch who has ties to a power hungry warmonger.
Like, but I mean, the only thing I would say in Everton's defense there was that they weren't the only one doing that at that time, and it was a bolt from the blue that they weren't. Everton didn't realize how tied they were to Russian expansionist policies. Vladimir Putin's expansionist policies. They couldn't have known that.
Is that a sympathetic defense, though?
I mean, not for me, but at the same time, you know, Chelsea went through the exact same problem. By the way, Chelsea's finances. Oh, God. There's an article at the weekend. We'll get to that at some point, too. But, yeah. But didn't it feel big at the time? It felt huge when you heard that Usmanov's bank accounts in the UK had been frozen and that he would no longer be allowed, Everton would no longer be able to count on that money. That seemed huge at the time.
Everton did show a net spend, a positive net spend. The latest losses came despite Everton's accounts showing they made £47.5 million profit on player transfers. So maybe that, like, if they're looking for a defense, they maybe that's what they say. Like, look, you can see we are doing all we can to get out from this mess, but there are certain things that are beyond our control with some of these sponsorships being suspended indefinitely. But we've done everything else that is in our power to try to correct course. I mean, it doesn't help them that this is also at this moment they're also building a stadium, which is killing them financially.
Oh, absolutely. It's such a drain for them.
Net debt increased to £330.6 million because of, quote, significant investment in a new stadium, Everton said.
It's such a mess.
I think another deduction is coming. If I had a guess on this.
Right. And where that would leave them. Well, we don't know.
I don't know.
How many points? How many would it be? Would it be a Nottingham Forest style 4? That'd put them back into the relegation zone.
Or will it be an Everton 10? I mean, who the hell knows? It's all just...
How would any of this work if they went down? Like, you really do feel it would go into some kind of free fall. Like, the club would spiral. It would be over.
There's like an end of days scenario here?
Yeah.
That they're teetering right on the edge of.
It feels that way.
Oh, man. Now, that is really frightening.
I often say that there are some clubs that just have too much history, too much of a fan base. They're almost not too big to fail, but too big to go out of business. Like, they're not Bury, you know?
Who can just
fall out of the league.
But you might have said this about Leeds back in 2002, right?
Yeah, maybe.
And now, granted, they did come back to the Premier League, but, like, God, it took them almost 20 years.
20 years, yeah. Again, this is a developing story, as they say. We don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah. Finally here, one of Everton's chief rivals, JJ, in the battle to stay up, Nottingham Forest, got a 61st-minute goal from Chris Wood. They draw 1-1 with Crystal Palace.
Forest, good header, Andrew. Good header.
Yeah, sure.
Cheeky. Sure. Facing the wrong way, flicks it backwards. Liked it.
Yeah. Forest, of course, have also been deducted points this season, which prompted quite a scene before the game. Their fans... with banners and placards, they held up a couple banners reading "We shall fight and we shall overcome."
Yes, but can they overcome their owner? Is the question.
I thought "We shall fight, we shall overcome."
Too strong.
Well, a little misplaced. Like, when I read that, I was like, I mean, this is for you breaking financial rule. Like, if some tragedy had befallen them or something,
yeah,
like, that seems more "we shall overcome." But, like, you broke rules about spending. Like,
you signed 49 players.
It's not like this is, I mean, I get their message of, like, no matter what happens to us, we'll all, you know, we're all in this and we're going to fight for, but I don't know. It's not like.
It feels a bit, it's a bit mawkish and sentimental for what essentially is an error of bookkeeping because you sold Brendan Johnston in the wrong financial quarter.
Yeah, I don't know.
But that won't work. That's not going to fit on a banner.
Right.
We shall overcome selling Brendan Johnston in the wrong quarter. Therefore, our spending spiraling beyond PSR rules. It's not.
No, it's not quite as catchy or inspirational. But at any rate, I give, you know, I guess they got the right attitude here. If you were hoping, JJ, that Gio Reyna's stellar international break would vault him to this huge increase in minutes, well, it kind of did. He came on in the 60th, so that's something. However, and you wouldn't have known that was going to happen based on Nuno's comments pre-match, where he talked about Gio Reyna and his excellent international break. He said, Nuno said, very happy because he was man of the match against Mexico and he did very well. So we need all the players because we have hard work and we need all of them. We're going to see more of everyone because we need all of them. They are aware that now is not important to have any feelings of selfishness. It's about the team. And if you play 1 minute, it's for the team.
That did not sound positive going into this weekend. So wow. When Gio played a perfectly basic square pass to Morgan Gibbs-White for that cross, I felt immense pride.
Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, look, I would think Forrest had to see that. Like, they obviously did see how well he played, that he scored, had two assists for his national team. Whether or not that matters in terms of unseating some of the guys ahead of him. Look, I'm not saying Reyna. What I've said all along since this Nottingham Forest move happened, I don't expect him to start. There are guys ahead of him in the pecking order that he's not going to pass. But this is okay with me. Coming on in the 60th, seeing, you know, playing the final 30 minutes of a tight game, I'm good with that.
And getting I hope time he keeps to getting impact the game. It's better. It's better than coming on in the 85th and the 86th and the 87th like he was before.
Where you kind of maybe have one chance to make an impact.
Yeah.
Or because it's Nottingham Forest, there's a, you know, I don't know how many chances you even get at that stage in the game. But I'm okay with this. If he's coming on the 60th consistently, would we sign up for that? I think so.
I think so. I'm fine with that. And you can't say you're not getting an opportunity to change things.
Yeah. There you go. We'll have a little bit more Premier League stuff a little bit later on the pod. Like we said, there's a huge midweek slate of action. So we'll kind of look at a couple of those before we get out. I know maybe some United fans are wondering, why haven't you mentioned us? Maybe they don't want us to.
They're probably delighted.
And then one of the matches of the season also happened over the weekend, Newcastle, West Ham. So we'll get to a couple of those before we get out, but we'll go ahead and take a break. One of the biggest, I mean, maybe the biggest story in the sport over the weekend, aside from Manchester City and Arsenal, was the decision of Xabi Alonso to stay put. So we'll have a little bit on that when we come back. More Caught Offside still to come. Don't go anywhere.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Oh, back now, Caught Offside. Andrew, I sent you a video, and I never realized this about you until I sent you the Ronnie Pickering viral video, that you are a man who enjoys a good viral video. So I sent you another one right before we started broadcasting. It's basically a man who is pulled over in front of another car, gets out, puts on boxing gloves. This man is probably in his mid to late 50s, maybe early 60s, late 50s, early 60s, gets out with boxing gloves and has an argument with the man who is recording this, produces them from the trunk of his car, and then argues about doing 20 miles an hour in a 40 mile an hour zone.
And which is embarrassing.
It is embarrassing. It's one of the most English things I've ever seen. And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I have questions if it's real.
I think it's real. I think this guy...
It's so ridiculous.
I mean,
it's even more ridiculous in some... Like, Ronnie Pickering, to me, is still the champ here. That one is still funnier to me. This one, like, he stops his car, opens his trunk, and puts on boxing gloves?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of something like this?
I know, but there
in a fit of road rage.
But this guy was like he was very much himself. And these guys, the guys who are videoing him are laughing at him at the boxing gloves. They're very much younger than him. I just don't see how this would be fabricated. It's also wet. It's so rainy.
But some of his explanations of like, they're like, he's like, well, why are you honking at me or whatever? And they're like, you're going 20 miles an hour in a 40. And the guy's like, well, what's wrong with that? 40 is just the limit. Like, I feel like his response, I don't know.
But look, and he comes out with two wrong boxes. Like, the boxing gloves aren't even matching. And then he goes, mate, you haven't got the same boxing gloves on. He goes, yeah, I've got a spare pair in the car. Don't you want them?
It's pretty good. If it's real, it's amazing. It's not Ronnie Pickering, though.
Ronnie Pickering's amazing.
Oh, I love that guy. Yeah. But I guess we should post it so people can see.
Just in case they don't know who Ronnie Pickering is.
Yeah. Let's see, JJ. We got to talk about some of the updates from Germany. Borussia Dortmund, they beat Bayern 2-0. And meanwhile, Bayer Leverkusen get two late goals to come back, and they beat Hoffenheim 2-1. Yeah. Unbelievable scenes. I mean, it's over. It's over. Bayern's reign atop Germany is done. It's a 13-point lead for Bayer Leverkusen with 7 games to play. This is amazing.
It is amazing. I feel like we should be in the streets celebrating this. When it finally the trophy goes to Bayer Leverkusen, where they can get rid of that now, we should be in the streets. This is brilliant.
Can I ask you a question?
You may.
Because I've been trying to figure this out. So it's now 39 matches unbeaten for Leverkusen. Now, look, it's not like that part. The title race is over. That part of it isn't, if they can actually go through this with an Invincibles season. And I've been trying to figure out what is the more likely thing to happen. Like, you telling me before a season, hey, Leicester City, like relegation candidates, Leicester City, they're going to win a title this year. Or you're going to tell me Bayer Leverkusen, like a mid-sized big club kind of thing.
Mm.
Not only are they going to win the Bundesliga, but they're going to go unbeaten in doing it. Which one of those things would get more of like a, like, which one of those is more ridiculous? I don't know.
Leicester is still the more ridiculous one. Leverkusen are still
unbeaten.
You know, unbeaten is, I mean, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, unbeaten was very, very, like, so unlikely. And they're not there yet, but.
Right. We have to see it out. Yeah. I mean, maybe this conversation should be saved for the end of the season, but it's a hard, I don't know.
Are Leicester City now the barometer for all mad things that happen in European League football?
Yeah. Anything crazy gets compared to them doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leverkusen, I mean, we knew Xabi Alonso had some, had a lot of admirers, but it's his first senior club job. So nobody could have known, like, to what extent he would influence this team, their style of play. They made some very, very good signings. Excellent signings in the off season that really bolstered them, and they got experience in. So, but like, you couldn't have seen it coming, and it is brilliant. It's absolutely like German league football needed this so badly. Like, for anyone, like, especially after last season with what Dortmund did and Munich falling over the line, winning the league on goal difference or whatever it was. Like, it was really crucial.
And I wonder if that was a warning shot. Like, the same way, remember Manchester United's last title when Fergie left, and then you kind of saw what United were becoming after that. Yeah. Some of it was, I don't know if Moyes is the right man for this, but some of it was also, I wonder if Fergie saw where this was headed.
Oh.
I think you could say Bayern winning the title the way that they did last season, like, incredibly dramatic, that moment of triumph, if you want to call it, them winning that title, but like, you had to exit that season thinking a little bit, this Bayern run might be the end of something.
I think that the haste with which they got rid of Nagelsmann was crazy. The haste at which They kind of like overturned, you know, the board members, Sally Hamazic was gone. Like, I'm not saying they shouldn't have freshened things up, and but there just seemed to be so much flux on the field and so much turmoil off it that this is where we are now. But all credit to Leverkusen. There's still other teams you have to go and beat and do it in such a specific way. They've been great, absolutely brilliant. And you're right, it's wrapped up.
Yeah, I mean it's over. 13 points with 7 to go. Now, much the way we said, you know, with Everton, there's no floor or ceiling for where the bad news ends. Well, in this season that Leverkusen is having, it's the exact opposite, where there's no ceiling to where the good news ends for them. They win in stunning fashion, coming from behind on the weekend where Bayern Munich lose. And then on top of that, coming out of this weekend also, is that Xabi Alonso announces that he's going to stay.
Yeah.
Just going against all the odds, and he's going to stay at this club for at least another season, which I don't think anybody really would have. I mean, it's always been possible. There's always been whispers of this, but in my heart of hearts, did I think he would make that decision? No, I didn't. He said, at this moment, I feel this is the right place for me to develop as a coach. It's a process. The development of the team is parallel with my development as a manager. I still have a lot of things to do to prove myself, to experience. And right now I have a situation in the club where I feel really stable, really happy with the team and the club. Amazing.
So I both love it and I hate it.
Okay.
I absolutely love it because I'm always saying these things. The game is just players, resources, managers, sporting directors, everything is all sucked towards the top six of the Premier League. This vortex of talent, and nobody gets a chance to build anything. You build something, you don't even get it. How bad would it have been, really, or how much an indication of modern football if Xabi Alonso was managing Liverpool or Bayern Munich in the Champions League next year and not the team he's taken to the Champions League by winning the league? Like that. This is
way cooler.
This is so much cooler. And it is what it should be. I, for some reason, Brian Clough popped into my head. I mean, imagine after the Forest win the league and Brian Clough becomes Manchester United manager. Back in the 70s, then there's no double European Cup for Forest. You know, you don't have the next 20 years of Forest being a top six, top five, top four, whatever team in England. All that's gone. You know, stories don't get a chance to germinate and to grow anymore because of the pull of money. Mm-hmm. And I understand market economics, and I understand why things go the way they are. But like another example, Postecoglou at Celtic. Now, we know from Celtic, they probably would never have given him the backing to develop in Europe and do what he wanted to do. But he had 2 years there, gone. There was no chance to kind of take things forward.
Right. And everyone kind of knew it.
Like, yeah. And
this is just the natural order of things.
Yeah. But it's unnatural. It's because money at one end of European football is so much that you simply can't turn it down. And this is great. It also speaks to a guy who's independently wealthy from his playing career. Yeah. That would definitely be a part of it. This is not some guy who's, this is not Graham Potter, who's fought his way up from Östersunds all the way, you know, gone on this long coaching journey. This is a guy who's would have finished the game and would have been able to retire comfortably on what he made and not have to worry about working again. So it's different in that regard. And in lots of other managers' cases, they would not be able to make this decision. But I love it. I think it's very, very cool. But I hate it also because There's no manager out there on the prospective candidate list for Liverpool that gets me excited in the same way that Xabi Alonso does. Mm-hmm. That's the other side of it. Everybody else I have qualms about, or I don't know enough about, or I worry about, or they don't excite me, or they don't seem a fit like he would. And there's no replacing Jurgen Klopp. I just know that there isn't. He's a once in a lifetime manager. Accepted, but if Klopp has to go, then Alonso seemed like the one for me, and it's disappointing from that point of view. But also, it's a brat mentality.
No, that's not a brat mentality.
It is a brat mentality.
No, it isn't. You support a club. They have a managerial opening. And you want the best guy for that job to manage your club. Like, that's who wouldn't want that. Like,
yeah,
you don't have to feel bad about wanting Alonso.
I guess I feel bad in more the sense that, just like I started this conversation with, I like the idea of these small of stories happening, you know, that it's not always about money.
Yeah. Now, one thing that has emerged from this Xabi Alonso decision is that some fans, maybe more prominently media, specifically Richard Keys, who we've now mentioned a couple times on the show, have used this as a reason to question Alonso's courage.
So crazy.
This is an interesting one. I don't see this as a question of courage.
No.
Like, I think in Alonso's statement, I think that he's just being genuine. I think he's just doing what he thinks makes the most sense for him and his development as a manager. And I think on the idea of courage, I think you can make an equally compelling case for either decision as being the courageous decision or the decision that's lacking in courage. So I'm kind of throwing it out. But I will say this. This, JJ, I guess, would be the other opinion. When I said at the start of the show, I was worried about two opinions of what people might think. I will say this about Richard Keys and the comments that he made. I think people, because they like to take shots at him, like he's not afraid to throw out big opinions. And because of that, I think people love to chop him down.
Yes.
I don't agree with a lot of the things he said. Like I just said, I don't necessarily agree with this decision or with this opinion that he has. However, here's the one thing that I will say in his defense. People that I've seen in the media are now going too far the other way to knock him. And they're saying things like, he thinks that this is showing a lack of courage. No, no, no. It's the opposite. Almost that it would be cowardly for Xabi Alonso to leave and take a job with a big club. And to that, I would say, now that is also not true. That is not true. Sometimes, like, it may seem easy to us. Oh, go manage Real Madrid. Yeah, what do you even have to do? Like, whatever. Let the team manage itself. That is not true. Those high-priced locker rooms are not for everyone. And as a manager at a certain places in his career, sometimes they know, I don't know that I'm ready for that. I know, JJ, you've said this about Pochettino when he went to PSG before. Mm-hmm. So, like, everyone's killing Richard Keys for saying this, but I don't think it's asinine to be acting like it doesn't take courage to go and manage a big club. If you're a young manager like Xabi Alonso that doesn't have a huge resume yet, granted, he's going to win this title and it's going to be incredible and people will respect him for it, but he's not some manager that's been around for 30 years who's built up all this equity. And like a lot of these players may not, you know, I don't know what they thought of Xabi Alonso as a player. Does he resonate the same way that like some of these other, like Zidane did when he walked into a Real Madrid locker room? I don't know that he would resonate in that same way. So like going into a locker room like Munich or, you know, Real Madrid's not available now, I'm just using that as an example, or even Liverpool being the guy after Klopp with the hold that Klopp has had over that team for a generation, that also takes courage. So again, I disagree with Richard Keys, but it's the same way I disagree with like Gab Marcotti on this, who like guys who are going the other way, suggesting that like, no, this, the courageous way would be to do this. I throw the argument of courage out altogether. For me, it's just about what suits him at this point in his career.
Right.
And for him, he's just developmentally, I'm happy where I am. Like you said, JJ, he doesn't need the money. I give him credit because he clearly has a belief in himself that his stock isn't going to drop. So like at some point when he does feel developmentally, he's ready to take on the challenge of walking into a locker room with those kind of egos. He thinks that this is not going to disappear, that he'll have the opportunity at some point if he wants it. He just isn't ready at this point. Like
in many ways, he's backing himself for the future, that this isn't just, I got to capitalize on what's happening right now because I'm not sure I can do this again. He believes in what he can do as a manager. And he's backing himself that these opportunities will be there down the line. He's also a young manager. And he's a family guy. You know, maybe they're happy where they are.
I'm sure that is a huge part of it. That, like, my life is pretty great at this club. I believe in what we're doing. I'm happy here. Like, I don't feel the need to mess with all that. Like you said, he has money, so there's not, like, this pull. Some managers might, you know, like you mentioned Graham Potter before, like there are certainly managers who felt like an opportunity presented itself and they had no choice. And like they're, you know, maybe Ten Hag, that might even be the case with him right now at United, where there are certain guys who just felt the opportunity is now for me to take this move to a big club. I like, maybe I'm not ready for it, but I got to do it because I don't know that I'll have a chance again. And I do want to manage at that level. So I just have to do it. I respect Xabi Alonso for the moment presenting itself to two destinations that kind of make sense, places where he's played, where the Leverkusen fan base would probably understand him leaving. Like the moment is here where he could do that. But, you know, other managers maybe made that leap when they weren't ready because they felt like they had no choice. He's not going to do that. He's comfortable in staying at this place and continue to develop for when he does think he's ready. So I have no problem with it. But I disagree with those saying that leaving for a big club would have been a lack of courage. So
I think you're
courage
right.
Courage is not an issue for me here, really.
It's also that weird thing we do when we talk about football. We talk about it in terms of almost like politics or war, you know? Courage.
Yeah.
It's a decision he's made, and I think he may be vindicated by it.
Yeah. So we'll see what this becomes. I guess the only interesting thing is, like, yeah, I was watching it's March Madness, of course, right now, and so I get in the mood during March Madness. So I watched the other day a documentary was made recently about the 2003 Syracuse team that won the championship. And at the end of it, Carmelo says that he was not going to leave, that he loved Syracuse. He loved being there and he wanted to stay and try to win another title. And he wanted to win player of the year. He said there were more things he wanted to achieve. And Jim Boeheim, before the press conference, when Melo was going to make his announcement, whatever it was, Boeheim said to him, "You get your ass off my campus. You have nothing else to achieve here. You're gone. You're going to the NBA. I will not have you on our team next season. Whoa. You're going to the NBA."
Coach Oldman.
So Coach Oldman was basically like, no. Like, you need to understand what is the right thing for you to do here. And emotion is...
Was he a one and done?
Melo, yeah. He did that as a freshman. And he said he wanted to come back, but Boeheim told him, no, you're gone. I do want, like, Xabi Alonso, the Leverkusen support could say to him, like, you're going to, like, if they go unbeaten and win a title, this is like, no, Xabi, like, you've done all you can do here. Go to bigger things.
Spread your wings. Yeah. Well, we know football never works like that.
It does not work like that. And also, I guess he could still win a Champions League. Like, there is somewhere else for him to go here in terms of things that he could achieve. But yeah, so it's interesting. Let's see, before we get out, JJ, a couple final things. Just wanted to mention in MLS, the most notable thing I saw this weekend. I know we talked on our season preview pod about the hype around Colorado and the offseason they had.
Yeah.
And up to this point, it had not really materialized on the field. They hadn't won at home yet. They're trailing by a goal in the 82nd minute against LAFC. And then suddenly it all just clicked. Georgi Mihailović stands over a free kick and just a great goal. Little surprise. He went right at Hugo Lloris. And I guess Hugo was just flat-footed, kind of flailed at it. But it was a great free kick from Mihailović. And then 6 minutes later, Mihailović again scoring to give Colorado the win. It's their, like I said, first home win of the season. Really sets Mihailović on his way. He was the big designated player signing. And now they're at Inter Miami next week, which will be a quality test to see kind of where they're at. If this was truly them clicking with these offseason moves, no better place, I guess, to find out than going across the country to Miami.
True enough. Although NYCFC at the weekend held on for a draw.
Yeah. Although Suarez scored again.
Suarez did score again, so he's proving me wrong. But they're kind of, I won't say they're in a slump, but they could definitely do with a certain Argentinian player coming back in to enliven them. I watched the Cascadia Derby, Andrew. Mm. 3-2 to Vancouver. Raced into a 2-0 lead. And then Portland kind of took over, kind of awoke from their stupor. Evander with a cracking goal. And then Felipe Moura with a nice little header. And it's 2-2. And late on, we're talking about goalkeepers making mistakes. Former LAFC goalkeeper Maxime Crépeau he's diving on the ground. It's on turf. The ball is not going to move exactly as you want. He's trying to cut out the cross. He bungles it. Ball breaks. And Fafa flicks it home. And so it's... it's a defeat for Phil Neville, and that's three losses on the bounce for Phil Neville. And I'm just
not that you're keeping tabs on such things.
No, I'm. Look, I'm just wondering if it's a case of, you know, you just suddenly become a good manager. He's gone to Portland. That's the fit, and I just doubt that a little bit. Also interesting, Sebastian Bearhalter, son of Greg.
I know that last name.
Yeah, son of Greg, coming on for Vancouver in the second half. So that's what I took out of that weekend.
There you go. So that was the weekend. Let's look ahead to the midweek. There's a lot going on. We got to figure out when we're going to record this week, because usually we record early Thursday, but I don't. We might have to wait until
it might be a Friday morning drop, because Liverpool play Sheffield United.
Yeah.
Chelsea, Manchester United, although that game feels
that's a big game. Well, let's look through the midweek slate. So Tuesday, Nottingham Forest and Fulham, for all of us Gio Reyna watchers out there. This could be a chance for some increased minutes, right? A midweek match. Maybe there's some tired legs that, although I guess coming back from an international break, most guys should be fit. If anything, Reyna is the one who's played a lot with the two USA matches. And yeah.
He's rested.
Yeah, so I don't know, actually.
Doesn't even travel with the squad. Oh, my God. Stop.
And then also on Tuesday, West Ham and Tottenham, little London derby. We should mention, too, we didn't mention this earlier, but West Ham involved in one of the matches of the season.
Yeah.
On the losing side over the weekend against Newcastle, 4-3. Newcastle, who were trailing 3-1, they finished the game with three unanswered to win this one in thrilling fashion. Harvey Barnes, what a winner.
Yeah,
for
what
Newcastle.
An equalizer too.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a crushing blow for the Hammers.
A big blow, Andrew, and it will be Exhibit A in the case against David Moyes, removing David Moyes. West Ham, they did their thing where they kind of, you know, didn't need a whole lot of the ball. They were happy for Newcastle to have the ball. And they were 3-1 up after an hour with a brilliant goal from Mikel Antonio, some really good play by Paqueta. I mean, Bowen, Antonio, and Paqueta, that's Exhibit B, saying, you know, can we be more on the front foot? I sounded slightly like a Chandler there from Friends. Can we be more on the front foot? But like, West Ham fans would be like, we should be doing more with this, you know? So it's an hour gone.
Three goals.
I know, Andrew, but they also sat back and conceded four. And on the XG conceded chart, West Ham are like third. So basically, it's not like Moyes is making them hard to beat. They're still conceding a ton of XG. So it's, you know, it's not working. It's just not working. Even though he'll tell you, well, look where we are. Exciting times ahead. I mean, that in the pre-match, the interviewer was going, this is a, you know, you must be looking forward to the second half of the season with your position in both the Premier League and your position in European football. And Moyes was all happy. And then it's all washed away. Now, he makes a substitution. I will give him a break on this. Bringing on Calvin Phillips, you know, to control things in midfield, it shouldn't mean you're going to concede three goals unanswered.
No.
It shouldn't mean that. But that's exactly what it meant. They fell apart after that. Just disastrous. And the moment that kind of encapsulates his season for West Ham, this move, Calvin Phillips was giving away a penalty. Although I really should say it was more that Anthony Gordon earned the penalty. Mm-hmm. So that was the most controversial issue out of this game that kind of just had everyone talking. The PFMs, myself, Craig Burley, who else would I add to that? There was many of us who were like, it's a penalty. You may not like how it's won, but it's a penalty. Whereas the other people were like, if anything, it's a foul on Phillips. It's a...
You mean Gordon?
It's a foul on Phillips by Gordon, because he gets in the way of him kicking the ball and he kicks into the back of him. I'm not convinced by that either. I knew it was a penalty the minute the referee went to the screen. If he's going to the screen for this, he's going to give a penalty, because essentially, Andrew, tell people what happens.
Well, Calvin Phillips is trying to clear a ball, and so he's lining it up
and winding up.
And in his backswing of his leg, basically, Anthony Gordon kind of he's behind Phillips. He's not really in the play, but he's sort of like, I don't know if he had time to think this or if it's just instinctual, but he's just like this backswing on his leg is long enough that if I just throw my foot in front of him, he'll kick me. And that's what happened. And they gave the foul on Phillips, who's trying to kick the ball and clear it. I guess you're right. I guess it's a penalty, but I don't like it either. There's something about it that doesn't feel right to me when a player, Gordon's not doing anything other than just trying to like almost trick everyone into thinking he's been fouled. But what he's fouled doing, though?
Can I ask you this? Is there an argument that Gordon, even though he doesn't touch the ball, establishes possession by stepping into that gap?
I don't think so. Not if I looked at that and you asked me, who is in possession right now? I'd be crazy to say Gordon. I mean, Phillips is kicking he's kicking the ball.
Do you know how I knew it was a penalty? Instantly knew it was a penalty. Because Messi did it to Koulibaly in the Naples-Barcelona game during the 2020 Champions League. Remember that? The game played behind closed doors.
Okay. I can't say I remember that individual moment.
I remembered. I have the video.
Oh, my God.
Oh, what a nerd. And Messi does not exactly the same thing. But Koulibaly does this mad long wind-up. I'm like, what are you doing? And Messi nips in, doesn't touch the ball, and then Koulibaly kicks him, and it's given as a penalty. So I
want to send me the video. I want to see how they're different.
Oh, they're a bit different because the ball is a bit further ahead of Koulibaly in his wind-up. Now, in both cases, kick the ball away, guys. Why are you doing this massive, you know what? You know when someone punches on a cartoon and they swing their fist beforehand?
Wasn't that bad.
Why are you doing that? Get rid of the ball. Be aware of your surroundings.
I guess. I don't know. I just think it was kind of unfortunate. And it didn't end there for Calvin Phillips, who after the match, I guess on the way to the team bus, gave the finger to some angry West Ham fans. For whatever he was when he was... when he'd become a regular for England, to where we are now, this is as dramatic a downfall. I mean, who does this go into? Like, what other category? Is this like Danny Drinkwater?
Danny Drinkwater.
Is that who you were about to say too?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not where you want to be, right?
No. I will say one thing that, I've got some Leeds United friends, chief amongst them is Wayne. And he said, when City came in and paid 45 million or whatever it was and took him, he was like, I think Leeds have done all right here. I think we've seen the most that's out of him. And there was a sense that he thrived under Bielsa because of what Bielsa could do. Like, is he an amazing passer of the ball? No. Is he particularly skillful carrier of the ball? No. Well, what did he do for Bielsa? He was constant. Non-stop running. He was a dynamo in that midfield.
But he was even better for England though, which was not Bielsa.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I remember him. And also injuries wise, you know, when he got up with Leeds, there was a lot of time where he was not playing, where he was injured. So I think Leeds were like, kind of happy to get rid. And then maybe.
Didn't really work out for anyone, though.
Maybe it's just a case, he didn't play it. He hardly played at all last year.
I know.
So maybe it's just a case, you can't have this long layout and then be thrown into a Premier League midfield of a team that's got some decent players and expected to thrive. And Moyes made it, he was a Moyes signing. It was a guy he targeted specifically, and it's backfired terribly. Yeah. Terrible weekend for West Ham. Just terrible. Yeah,
not good. Let's see, Wednesday this week, Arsenal and Luton Town. You would think 3 points for Arsenal.
That'll be 6-5, like the 5-4.
Well, unless decisions are made to, I don't know, Luton are pretty threatening. We might have to go low block for this one, just to see it out.
I think Arsenal should win that one.
Yeah. Man City and Aston Villa, that probably your marquee fixture from these next few days.
City needs some Rwenge for what happened before Christmas. That's my clever way of saying revenge.
Okay.
That's it. That's a big one.
Yeah. And then Wednesday night, Tuesday, the CONCACAF Champions Cup continues. But Wednesday night, I'm targeting Inter Miami and Monterrey. First legs. Also Tuesday, yeah, I think Columbus and Tigres. New England in action as well. So a few of the MLS clubs in action for the CONCACAF Champions Cup. But yeah, Inter Miami and Monterrey. That's a good one. And then Thursday, JJ, Liverpool and Sheffield United. So much like Arsenal, you would expect Liverpool to, they'll have seen what happened, of course, with Arsenal and City both playing on Wednesday. So then it will go to the scene will shift to Anfield, where you would expect Liverpool to answer in kind against
you
Sheffield.
You would expect that. And it's important that any member of the Liverpool staff is not seen eating a sandwich in front of Chris Wilder. Wilder and Klopp have previous. They don't like each other.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
don't like each other at all.
Oh, I'm in. I'm in on this. And then also Thursday, not based on the table, but certainly by name, brand, value, Chelsea and Manchester United with a big one as well. I mentioned the XG table earlier. Chelsea are fourth in that.
Yeah.
Their expected points are 17 higher than their actual points. This stuff, these things, look, I don't know what these things actually mean, except that I feel like they should be remembered for when next season rolls around. Because I do wonder if these things can be indicative of a team maybe being like Everton, Chelsea. Like, these teams might be better than whatever we think they are, because they maybe have had kind of been dealt sort of an unlucky hand at times.
Yeah, they still tied with Burnley at home.
Oh, sure, yeah, I know.
Quite clear.
Look, they're perfect. I get that. Meanwhile, Manchester United, they're 15th in that XG table. So it's just not really good in any whatever table you want to look at for them. If anything, they've maybe been fortunate.
Oh, the game against Brentford. So bad.
It was.
Oh,
this is a weird thing with United this season. I don't know how many games this has happened where we've watched them and had the same experience, the shared experience of everyone watching United play, saying, I don't know how they're getting anything out of this game. I mean, who was it? Matt Holland on the call, who after Mason Mount scored, he said, somehow United are ahead. I don't know how. I think everyone felt that way. And sure enough, it was short-lived, as Brentford still had time for a response, as Christoph Eier scored the winner.
Yeah, yeah. But
equalizer.
Yeah. I think it's time to relive how that goal went down, but live it through an old friend.
Yeah, this is so this was Mark Goldbridge, JJ, on his stream, I guess.
Yes, commentating.
I'm Brent. Hello, I'd like to report a robbery. Yeah, yeah. I don't know where Brentford is in London, but they've been robbed. Yeah, it's disgusting, really. But I feel I have to do it, even though I'm ecstatic that they have been robbed. Bye. It's true. I mean, they'll probably go and get an equaliser now because they bloody deserve it. But, yeah, I mean, just how many times have we done this season? They're in the box. Oh, no. There we go. 1-1. Just couldn't f***ing... I tell you what for free. What a waste of time that was. What an absolute f***ing waste of time that was. This lot couldn't f***ing mark a piece of paper. I've said that one before. I tell you what, if you asked this lot to mark their nose, they'd end up with a finger up their ass.
Look, people can have their opinions of that guy. He's been on this podcast before, and I don't know. I don't know
it
if United fans...
It gives us nothing, though. He never does that. He's never like that when you interview him. He is so straight. He wants to be like proper journalist. So you're never getting that. Our interview with him was very mundane.
I don't know what United fans think of him. All I'll say is this. I think he's great. I love that guy.
Hello, police. There's been a robbery. I don't know what part of Brentford, London, what part of London Brentford's in, but there's been a robbery. Hello.
And then sure enough. Nope, never mind. Robbery. All the items have been returned. There's no robbery here.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Now, Ivan Toney could have had a hat trick in this game. I don't know how many times he linked up with Wissa and
he hit the inside of the post.
Look,
yeah.
There's nothing else to say about United, really.
Yeah.
I mean, their own fans predicted this after they beat Liverpool in the Cup. They were basically on to us. Yeah, don't worry. We'll get done at Brentford. No, like. I
this season, I mean, honestly, this season, for what, however bad it's been for United, it could have been so much worse. They could easily be where Chelsea are right now.
Yeah.
Easily. I mean, those two things could be swapped. Chelsea and United could easily swap spots in the table. And, you know, I don't think anybody would have batted an eye at it.
You're looking for signs of anything. I cannot see anything where I can say this is developing into something. And it's not to say that like young players, like I've, Garnacho tries his heart out. Kobbie Mainoo does his absolute best. But, like, you know, None of it is coherent. Brentford look miles better than them. So much better than them.
I thought the same thing.
My God. I would be shocked if the recommendation that's made to the Manchester United board by the 25% that's in charge of football, by Ineos and those, let's keep Ten Hag.
Well, we got to see how the FA Cup plays out, because that could complicate
it. Is that enough?
I don't know, but that it could at least complicate that decision. Look, they're gonna have to beat Manchester City potentially. I mean,
will he be fired?
I think they're gonna beat Coventry. Look, if they lose to Coventry, then this decision becomes easier. But let's assume they win that. There's a good chance they're gonna play City in the final. I mean, if you beat Manchester City in an FA Cup final, is it easy to fire the manager? I'm not saying it's impossible.
They allow record numbers of shots. Every team gets a record shot against them. Shot total against them. I would not take for granted that they are they're beating Coventry. I'm going to say that right now.
Nah,
you won't go that far.
That's tough. I mean, look, the magic of Haji Wright. Who knows? Anything is possible. But I would pick. Show me something then.
Coventry currently sitting seventh in the championship.
Put some money down on it if you're feeling this way so confidently.
I'm not. I'm saying I just. All right. Okay. Well, what are we doing here? What are we talking?
I don't know.
You think United?
No, not with me. You're not going to bet me. I'm saying go on one of these, FanDuel, DraftKings, whatever.
You know what? I think I will.
All right.
Well, hey, throw down $40.
Whoa! You are confident, or you're just way wealthier than I realized. I don't know.
This is $40.
$40 on Coventry.
Yeah,
wow.
I cannot be throwing this away.
I thought you were saying
just come on. It'll be a bit of fun for the. It's an investment in the podcast, in fun, because they'll get hammered 6-0, and I look like wah wah.
Well, there you go, JJ. I got nothing left. It was a big one. The Premier League comes back, and we can't stop ourselves. I know. I made fun of it the other night. What a fool I was. We love this S. We can't get enough of it.
We love this S. Amazing.
And we got a whole midweek slate of action to keep us occupied. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, CONCACAF Champions Cup as well. I love it. We'll be back. Like I said, I don't know. The next one either, I guess you'll see it either late Thursday night or maybe early Friday morning.
Caught offside at CO Soccer Pod on X is probably the best way to see. I'll let everyone know on socials.
Yeah, we should. We got to wait. That Liverpool game, if we're going to talk title race, how dumb would it be to discuss the title race while Liverpool are in action? I think they're going to be Sheffield United. We could assume that, but I don't.
Chris Wilder comes in and takes a bite out of the sandwich.
We should just probably wait and see what happens. But yeah, we'll have a second one this week. You all know that. All right. So don't worry. JJ, I enjoyed this immensely. To you, I say.
Check you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.